I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your retrograde energy shift of music news and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
I'm too sexy for this shirt. Too sexy for your girl.
There are three of us here today, four if you count Pedro. So it is the Drake, the Future, and the Thug of Popcast, right? Okay, all of us too sexy for written criticism and audio criticism, and yet here we are. First, Charles Holmes is here. Charles, what's good, man?
Yo, what's going on, man? It's been a while. How you
doing? It's been a while. You have been missed, but you are welcome back. You are here. We are cradling you. You're swaddled in Popcast affection today. Charles is a writer and a podcaster for The Ringer. You have heard him before. He's back because the energy is big this time. Also, first time on Popcast, Jeffy Haza is here. Jeff, what's happening, man?
Hello. Thank you for finally having me.
Yeah, finally. That's exactly
damn. Right.
I like an adverb. Throw an adverb. That's right. Absolutely. Jeff is a senior editor at Rolling Stone, resident cool guy at the building. If you're in that building, you know I'm right. Both Charles and Jeff wrote very thoughtful assessments of Certified Lover Boy, the new Drake album. And we're going to have a very, very uproarious conversation about Drake today. We should probably start off with actually something we were just talking about off mic, which is there was a lot of very, very pointed anti-Drake hostility in the tone of the criticism that was coming out around CLB. And look, I think the record's kind of mid. I think we all agree it's like mid, maybe mid leaning positive, but basically it's mid. I'm not saying you can't dislike the record, but I do think that there's been this kind of wash of negative attention. And I wonder, just off rip, do you think it's that Drake is at a point in his career where there is no other take on Drake but to be negative in the big picture? Like, is the hostility an inevitability at this point?
Honestly, we just going in. If we're going to be honest, the last year and a half of Drake has not been great. It has been the first time in a while where he has not had a Drake level hit. At this point, like, even Drake's hits that aren't would be other rappers, other pop stars' biggest hit. Now Drake is at a point where we are just judging him against his own career. And it has been very, very clear, like, the records he's dropped have been cool. Like, they've been fine, but he has not had a One Dance. He hasn't had a Hotline Bling. He hasn't had that type of record that can propel him past everything.
You tell me 2C Slide is not a top five Drake record?
2C Slide's a sleeper.
Let's not slander 2C Slide. That's a banger, if we want to be honest.
Wow. Okay. I was not expecting that.
John, how old are you?
In stereo. How old am I?
I want two questions. How old are you?
I am 45 years old.
Yo, what do you got against really? TikTok? What do you have against TikTok? What's wrong with the nice TikTok dance?
Me and Taylor Lorenz are literally the in-house TikTok reporters. What are you talking about? I bet my TikTok feed's cooler than yours. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying, you slandering 2C Slide. Like,
first of all, who was the first person to write about Drake manipulating TikTok to try to buy himself a hit, in essence? Who was that first person? It was your boy.
I'm sorry, you're a certified podcast boy. You know what I'm saying? I almost tried to pull your card. I'm sorry.
I literally can't believe you had me pull out the birth certificate just to get slandered. Good Lord, Charles.
Sorry, I feel a special way about 2C Slide.
For the right price, I'll make your For You page right. How about that?
Oh my gosh. For the record, 2C Slide's not a bad record.
It's not a bad record. It's an unambitious record. And I think maybe that's kind of what we're all touching on or dancing around or dancing right on top of, which is, historically, I have associated the best Drake songs and albums with a sonic ambition, which is to say in the scale of the records and the texture of the records, but also what he's reaching for stylistically, what other kind of sounds he's looking to incorporate or biting, depending who you ask. I don't feel any of that ambition or very, very little of it on CLB. Jeff, what about you?
For the most part, I agree. And I think, like, even to the point of Drake having a pretty bad year and a half, I'd say probably 2 or 3 years where it's kind of been on a decline. I don't think that all of that's his fault, though. And I think that's where a lot of the super harsh criticism is kind of hard for me to take, because it's like, you know, the more I think about the Meek Mill situation, the more uncalled for it is. The more I think about the like Pusha T situation, it's like, yeah, that is kind of wild that somebody was just like, here's your son that no one in the world knows about, but we're just going to like leak this news in this weird way. So he's got a lot to be mad about. And I think he's letting it get to him. And that's what sucks about this record more than like not having a big hit or anything.
All right. Well, to be fair, and I don't want to like, I'm an Aubrey's angel. Everybody,
why start now, Charles?
Whoa. Caramonica, I love you. I love you. What's going on here? This is the Pusha T and Drake of podcasting. What's going on? All I'm saying is, to be fair, I think that like sometimes we misremember that beef. Like Drake did come after Pusha T's like wife. Soon to be wife, yes, on that. And yeah, for years he was like punching down on Cudi when he was going through his mental health issues. So sometimes I feel like Drake is the kind of artist to like throw a stone and hide his hand. And I'm just kind of like, this is the bed you and Kanye made, and now you're lying in it. And now at this point, I'll be honest, we have 3 Drake records and 3 Kanye records that have been derailed by the world's most unnecessary beef. That's how I feel.
That's an interesting way to frame the beef. And I figured we would get to the Kanye stuff later, but we can at least touch on it now. If you think about hip hop, obviously, through the years, you think about the biggest names squaring off against each other. The beefs between a Jay-Z and Nas, you know, things at that level felt in the time essential. It felt essential both to the narrative arc of each of the individuals involved, and also some kind of counterbalance to like, oh, Jay-Z's getting a little pop, oh, but he's still gonna come at Nas. Like, there's still this kind of like cosmic balance. I think you're right in the sense that when I think of the Drake Kanye beef, I don't think it like solves either of those problems. It feels like insular and a little bit, it's just like personal therapy. It's not public therapy. It's personal therapy more than anything.
I think if Nas and Jay were beefing today in the way that they were in the, you know, 2000s, we would be having a much different conversation about it. It's like, these guys are too old to be out here talking like this. This is ridiculous. And I think like that's where a lot of this stuff just gets so like lost in the weeds, because it's like, these aren't two rappers at a growing point in their career. They're two people at the top of the game. There's no reason for them to be taking this that seriously. And I think that cosmic balance that you're talking about of those beefs in the past, it was like, it was almost like maintaining something about hip hop that was outside of the sphere of the mainstream pop culture. It was about what was happening in the real sense of hip hop in the streets, or whatever you want to call it. And this stuff is just famous people yelling at each other. It's people with more money than any of us talking about how will they have more money than the other guy. It's not exciting. It's not interesting. There's nothing about it that draws back to any sort of subculture or anything. It's just like TMZ.
And also, you mentioned the Meek Mill thing, and obviously the Meek Mill thing is kind of premised upon the code, right? You have to write your own rhymes. You know, you have like Meek Mill is sort of like teleporting in from the 1600s to tell Drake, like, good sir, thou hast to pen thine own parchments. You know, like that was the energy of that moment. But here you have Drake and Kanye, who maybe will like point at each other a little bit Spider-Man meme-y about this kind of stuff. But it's really not why either person at this point, it's not why people come to either person. I don't know if Drake fans have anxiety about whether he writes all his rhymes. I think he probably writes most of them, but I could be just a little bit unskeptical about that.
And ruin Know Yourself for everyone. What a great song. I didn't need to know how the sausage was made on that.
I love how the sausage was made on that. It makes it so much more. Jeff, and John, I want to ask you a very serious question. Does nobody think it is like very, very weird that like Kanye is out here like with the GDs trying to like scare Drake, and Drake is on an album saying how there's like vans waiting outside for him? I'm like, guys, like, what are we doing here? It is like that weird thing where it's like, there was like real street beef between Jay and Nas before they were rapping. They know each other. There's all of this history that us as listeners were learning in real time. Now with like Kanye and Drake, I'm just like, guys, you like, one of you is a billionaire and the other one is on their way. What are we talking about? GDs, like mob ties? What's happening?
But this is, to Jeff's point, some of that energy to me feels like retrofitting essentially a billionaire's gripe into this other idea of what a hip hop beef should be. It's basically like, oh, we're complaining about who writes the lyrics and whose house is big and who can hire whose design team from a clothing company.
Yeah.
Let me kind of like add in a little bit of this. Here's the GD stuff. And here's something that's a little bit more frisky, as you might say. And I think it doesn't feel, I mean, credible is a tough way to frame it, but it doesn't feel, how about this? It doesn't feel natural. It doesn't look like a coat that fits particularly well on either of them.
I think it's very funny. I find it very entertaining.
Hey, Chubbs.
True.
I forget who was saying it, but about the last three albums, Charles, was that you saying that they got derailed for this kind of energy?
Yeah, I think that's become part of the narrative too, with even Drake. Like Drake drops Views, then on More Life, the last song on that album, Do Not Disturb, is him saying I was an angry youth while I was writing Views. Like he and his team are aware when albums get derailed. Like Scorpion, famously, I'm pretty sure, and you can fact check me if I'm wrong, that album got derailed a little bit when it was supposed to be released because that happened during the middle of the Pusha T beef. There's a lot of songs tacked on that sound like he is referencing that beef. And like, I'm like, how many bloated Drake albums can we have where you're constantly relitigating beefs that it seems like the whole world is kind of like, hey, guys, like,
and also relax. It's literally not what he's best suited to. I mean, I think like people get distracted for all kinds of reasons in art. I'm currently distracted from writing a big piece by y'all. Like people, there are valid and non-valid reasons to be distracted. But I think on a fundamental level, especially when I think of Drake, Drake being distracted on account of this feels like, in essence, a violation of the thing that I think he's genuinely exceptional at, which is songcraft, construction, bringing in different influences and crafting broadly appealing music out of sounds that maybe other people would have thought were niche or regional or so on and so forth. That, to me, if we're going to distill the Drake gift, that's the Drake gift. And yet so much of this record is anxiety about what it's like to be at the top and anxiety about who's my father. No one's my father.
He's a father.
Is that a shot at Poppy song?
He's a father. Who's the daddy? This is literally the call her daddy of rap beefs. You know what I mean? Like, and so I wonder, like, between Drake and Ye, and we'll get back to the specifics of CLB in a minute, who does this detract from more? Who does it derail the narrative of more?
I think Drake completely. I think Kanye, you know, if we're talking about last three records, has been derailed more by the outside world. I mean, he had the whole Trump thing and all of everything that's going on in his situation. And not to mention that I think Kanye has leaned into this sort of reality star thing a lot more than someone like Drake, who tends to be pretty close guarded and close to the chest. And it's a real shame because I think, you know, as you mentioned, all the things that Drake does well, I think, you know, that last point about bringing in sounds that people haven't heard or might not be paying attention to is really what Drake was getting exceptionally good at. I think you talk about More Life and, you know, that was a record that brought a lot of sounds to a mainstream American audience that, for better or worse, would not be as prevalent as they are now if it weren't for that record. You know, if there wasn't a One Dance, I don't think it would have been as astronomical a growth of, you know, Afropop and West African music in mainstream American pop culture as we've seen, you know, in the past year or two. And, you know, that to me is more, you know, youth focused. It's more like, it's more real about what hip hop is essentially about than them trying to do this sort of relitigation of the way things happened in 1999.
I think out of everything that's transpired over the past couple weeks, like Kanye comes out on top just because all he had to do is release a semi-coherent album and people were going to be like, Kanye's back. This is the best thing he's dropped since The Life of Pablo. Whereas I think like Drake was actually the one who, the world never gave up on Drake. The world gave up on Kanye for very valid
reasons.
That's
real.
You know what I'm saying? And Drake, I think, was the chosen one. It's like, yo, even when his albums are bloated, there's still three or four songs that sound like some of the best songs you've
heard. They're undeniable.
They're undeniable. And
like
I think
Way Too Sexy.
Oh, God.
Way Too Sexy is, we will get into that. Way Too Sexy is one of the worst things Drake has ever committed to.
Oh, my God.
And I will go to my grave saying that.
I got to be honest. You just said that song title, and immediately the sleeves of my T-shirt just got torn off. Like, I don't even know. They just disappeared. It was crazy.
That's honestly a great way to think about Drake, even when, like, Drake samples. Like, the reason I like Nice for What versus, like, a Way Too Sexy is because I think Drake is very good when he's sampling a record about showing you something that was in the record that only Drake could find. Whereas, like, Way Too Sexy is, like, a perfect example. Like, Drake, you just took an already, like, cheesy but popular song and then just had, like, Future interpolate it, like, very lazily. Like, it does, you're not adding anything to the musical conversation, which is something that I think Drake, honestly, a lot of times was better than Kanye at.
Well, definitely. And also, a song also that was weirdly interpolated by Taylor Swift already.
Yes.
So it's not even, you can't even really make the case like
that.
Yo,
makes it sicker.
No one's, oh my, Jeff's on the post ironic right now.
No, low key, because it's like you were saying about Toosie Slide, like he manufactured this TikTok hit. And I agree with that idea where it's like, I think Drake understands youth culture in a way that, you know, the guy's 33, 34 at this point. You know, he understands it better than most people that
age. He's older than me. It's insane.
You know, but he understands it on a fundamental level that in a way that I think a lot of people that age struggle to. And I think he with Way Too Sexy, yeah, it's like kind of obvious. It's kind of silly. But if you open up any social media app right now, it doesn't matter what benign thing a kid is doing. That is the song they're putting on it for the next little while.
Wait, can I push back on that? Do we actually think Drake is as good at understanding youth culture as he was in the past? I still think he is better than other 34-year-old rappers, J. Cole. But, like, I don't know if young people will feel Certified Lover Boy in the same way they'll feel any random Rod Wave record or any Lil Baby record.
Yes, and I think to that point, here we are, Drake still rapping in the year of our Lord, 2021, about how his rhymes make for good Instagram captions. Dog, when was the last time you posted to feed on Instagram? When was the last time you needed a I'm sorry. When was the last time that happened? I truly, and I do spend a lot of time on TikTok. I don't feel like Drake is pervasive on TikTok. I don't even think, he doesn't even have, best I can tell, an official TikTok account. I don't think his music is pervasive on TikTok. I think the type of things that are successful on TikTok sonically don't necessarily go hand in hand with what Drake is good at. And so, Charles, I think that's a fair point.
Instagram and stories is where it's at, though.
Of course. But, like, Drake's not talking about a story, Gabs. He's talking about 2016 IG feed. picture of you off the coast of Milos with a caption, you know, pulled from some 2013 song. Like, that's what Drake means. Drake is basically like, you are fixing a hyper-polished image of the life that you are trying to present. And the only way that you can describe it is through something I said. That's what Drake's doing. But that's not how the internet is anymore. The internet's faster. It's more chaotic. It's more complicated. And it's less centralized. And I think that works against Drake.
I don't know what the record will sound like, but it's very funny to me that Drake drops this album cover that has these 12 pregnant women emojis on it. And, like, Lil Nas X does his Lil Nas X marketing scheme where he pretends to be pregnant. He's doing this whole elaborate rollout. And I'm just like, oh, Lil Nas X is doing the thing that we used to say Drake was good at, which is, like, he's the best at the internet. And I'm just like, oh, we're actually at the point where, like, people don't even care if the music's there anymore. They just want you to be hyper aware of the internet in a way where I'm like, oh, Drake, just by him being 34, is already losing that battle.
You want to talk about attention economy, you know, the way that Kanye relates to the attention economy. I don't think Kanye is good at the internet at all, but what he is good at is creating moments that people on the internet feel compelled to comment on. I don't feel Kanye is doing that specifically because it creates internet commentary. I just think it's like, that's just how his brain functions. You know, the thing that we gave Drake so much credit for, I feel like times have changed. And as far as Lil Nas X, I mean, look, we're 9 days away right now from Lil Nas X album. The best parts of it might have already happened.
But does that even matter?
That's what I'm saying.
You know, I think you could do a whole thesis around Drake and Lil Nas X's use of the internet and kind of come to a conclusion that there's two different approaches at play. Where you know, Lil Nas X is very hyper internet. You know, this is something, this is someone who is constantly posting and doing things to gain that attention. He did a weird thing with Tony Hawk the other day.
Nah, you tweaking.
You know, and I think
he's a troller and a shit poster in the best way.
Drake would look absurd trying to like match that level of kind of online-ness, for a lack of a better term. But I think he plays his part very well. I think he does his, like, sure, it's not a TikTok hit, but all over Instagram stories, it's the top song to pick for literally anything. And I think he knows where he fits into the current landscape in a way that I think is actually more savvy than a lot of people give him credit for. Like, he would be very weird with a TikTok hit. Like, that would feel weird for everyone involved. That's why Toosie Slide didn't hit, even though it's still a good song.
But could you imagine, come on, just humor me for a second, right? Drake's first TikTok on his account, right? And what it is, you know, maybe it's to a Coi Leray song. I don't know. Maybe it's to Backyard Boy. Like, who knows? But, like, all of a sudden, it's like, first it's Drake with a clean hairline, and then it's him, like, going, hiding somewhere, and then coming back with the heart. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's his first TikTok, and he's kind of giving you the hand rub. That's what I'm saying. Like, he's giving you the hand rub in one of these extremely luscious sweaters that he's wearing as part of the rollout. Like, he's giving you texture. He's giving you volume. He's giving you shape. He's giving you wet draping. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a fire TikTok. If I'm Drake, I'm trying to do that. And yet, there's something so unregulated about TikTok as a space that I think, and Drake is like a little bit too particular, that I think he won't let himself do it.
I think it's to the point that we were talking about earlier, and to my point about Way Too Sexy being a fantastic record, is, you know, a Drake that is unburdened.
This isn't Song Exploder Way Too Sexy.
A Drake that's unburdened by all this nonsense going around is someone who I think could have a lot more fun. I think the Drake we remember from pre-beef of any kind is someone who was down to be way more silly and way more kind of like absurd and not self-serious. And that's what I think a lot of people liked about him. He knows how to poke fun at himself in a really interesting and funny way. But I think he's been pushed into this position of like posturing for so long that he's kind of lost. It's like, we need the Drake TikTok with the weird hand rub and everything. That's perfect. Wait,
I actually just realized the sound for that TikTok is the, when you wipe your tears, do you wipe them just for me?
I mean, come on.
And then you come back with the heart cut.
Come on.
Hire John, me. Yo, John, hire me, dog.
Is TikTok cutting you a check? Because if they're not, man, they got to be on the phone.
Is 40 listening to this?
You're giving the sauce away for free.
Here's the thing. The subtitle of podcast is free game. Look, you could choose to absorb it. You could put it in your cart. You could add to cart. But you'd be surprised how many people out here are not adding to cart.
You gotta get them the email like you left something in your cart.
That's true. Jeff, also to the point, and you had mentioned this a few minutes ago. Okay, first of all, let's listen to something that Drake does on this record that is like very classic Drake, right? Let's listen to TSU, the intro, and we'll be back in a sec.
Austin, San Antonio, Marshall, Preview, it's going down, Warren County, Texas City.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. I developed this recipe when I was down in Georgia with my family. It stars a Korean red pepper powder called gochugaru. I love the way it blooms in the maple syrup and the rice vinegar. If you don't have gochugaru, you should totally get some. It's super versatile. It's not just that it brings heat, but fruity sweetness as well. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
So here's Drake channeling Houston. Unfortunately, as many have noted, channeling an R. Kelly songwriting credit, but it is Drake paying homage to an influential sound, an influential person. True story, when I did a Drake feature in 2012 or whatever, we were driving through the streets of Toronto, and who called Drake on the phone at like midnight but OG Ron C. That is a real thing. And Drake, it was the first time I think they talked on the phone. Drake locked his number in, and here we are 9 years later with OG Ron C on the record. There's a little Houston on this record, a little Afro beats on this record, a little Memphis on this record. I couldn't help but think, damn, like, where's a Drake Kumerica record? There are so many emergent sounds and scenes, and I believe fundamentally that Drake is paying attention. Why is there not more of that? Because that's ultimately where his gifts lie.
To start, as a Houston native, I think the touches of Houston.
Wait,
on
north
this
side
record,
or south? Wait, north side or south side?
Southwest Houston.
All right. Okay.
No city. Not a lot of rappers can do that, where they go into a different region and actually get fully adopted by that region. I did a story a little while ago talking to Max O'Cream, and before you could even make a wisecrack about Drake, it's like, no, he's held it down for Houston since day one. That line from like back in 09, a warehouse is bun coming. Like, I remember that show. I remember trying to go to that show because a girl I had a crush on was going. Like, he's been in that city and respectful to that scene the whole time. And you could say the same for, you know, all of the sounds.
And for Memphis, too.
Memphis, even UK, more or less. You know, he's...
whoa.
He respects the places that he goes, you know? And it's like, and I think that's something that, especially for someone at that pedigree of hip-hop, to be going into smaller regional scenes that deserve a lot more credit than they get on the mainstream. Not just, like, pull it, but adapt it to what he's already doing. That's something special. You know, he flips the Get Throat sample, but he does it the Drake way. You know, he doesn't try to match Bun B because he can't. You know, he's going to do it in his specific way. And those guitars sound crazy like that. It sounds insane.
Drake processes these other sounds. He processes them like memories. He doesn't process them in this kind of like pure transactional icy way. They're a little bit hazy. They're, like you say, they're refracted through his creative zhuzhing. They sound like embodied lived memories. And that's always why Drake is, I think, whether he's getting a full pass or he's just getting a creative pass, it's because of that. I mean, you want to talk about Texas, you think about some of the, like, sub-tensions, whereas like on Big Pimpin' and Bun and Pimp getting on this record, but Pimp having all this anxiety about it and being like calling Big Gip and be like, I'm gonna borrow your flow because I don't even want to be on this Jay-Z record. And Jay-Z really just doing this one thing and then not coming back.
Never coming back.
Right. It's like collecting a coin. And
how,
like,
many
a
times
video
has A$AP
game.
Rocky been in Houston?
I don't know.
A$AP Rocky shots.
Let's text Rihanna and find out.
But like, wait, guys, I want to defend Drake's UK-ness really, really quick, because I think one of the best songs that he released last year was that Heady One freestyle.
Oh, yes.
Freestyle,
oh, yeah.
True. Fair.
Where
fair,
he's like,
fair.
Like rapping in like Arabic and stuff. And that to me is like perfect Drake, where I clowned him the first time I heard that song. I'm like, what is this shish? By the end of the week, I'm like, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard this year. And I think that's what's missing from this record, where it's like, when Drake steps out and kind of puts his arm around like singers, rappers, people you've never heard, at first you're like, oh, it's a little corny. And then you're like, oh no, Drake has heard something that he's stamping, that he's like, guys, there's talented people here. You're not going to rock with this unless I rock with it.
Okay, so the cousin to Heady One freestyle, Demons with 504 and Sosigi.
Heavy one.
Very heavy. Very, very heavy track. And again, one of those things that you like see the email about it and you're like, and then you hear it and you're like, I did it again. Did it again. Did it again. But that said, to get to CLB a little bit, there aren't moments like that. And if anything, the Lil Baby verse feels a little predictable. I like the Durk verse. A little predictable.
Wait, you like the Durk verse?
I do.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm also just kind of in a Durk. I've been in a Durk stretch recently, so I might just be in it.
I'm so proud of Durk. I am happy for where he's gone this year. And I think that him shouting out his
girl,
partner's business, A1 stuff, A1 boyfriend of the year. But that verse is trash. Like, it is
both
Baby and Durk back to back. I'm like, Drake, what's happening?
I agree.
let's listen to Girls Want Girls, which is with Lil Baby.
Yeah, say that you a lesbian girl, me too. Hey, girls want girls where I'm from. Yeah, but girls want girls where I'm from. Yeah. Hey, yeah, girls want girls where I'm
my
from.
My girl got a girlfriend. Ain't trying to be out of shape. What's up on them curls? Then them gym don't work, get surgery. I'll pay for that, my courtesy. Can't imagine no bitch curving me. I put in that work overly. I handle business and I got too pretty.
So here's a question that's been on my mind. Drake is astute enough to understand that he is not the first person on the planet to say, oh, you like girl, you're a lesbian, you like girls, me too. He understands that he's not the first person to do that. And he's usually, I would say, reasonably able to miss the obvious dunks, or rather chooses not to take the obvious shots, I should say. Why do you think this was something he decided to rap about in this way? Like, do you think he didn't see a backlash coming? Like, do you think he's unaware of the progressive conversations about sexuality that happen on the internet? Like, what's going on?
I feel like he was trying to tease out something quasi-progressive, if that makes any sense.
Jeff.
Jeff, come on. I'm sorry.
Can you land this plane? Because I'm in the air with you right now and I just don't know where we're going.
Oh my God.
No, but okay.
Yeah,
It's a ridiculous song. It's a ridiculous song. For the record, it's ridiculous. But I think, you know, he knew it was going to ruffle feathers, but he also wasn't saying anything. You know, he wasn't going Lil Boozy on him, right? He was kind of teasing this sort of, I'm going to push the envelope only so much in this sexually nuanced way. In my opinion, I think he should have went all the way and just made a truly bisexual anthem, because that would have been cool. And I think this is as close as he could come to that. That's my take on it.
So you think it's like there's like some potential deep subtext going
listen,
on here?
Listen.
There is no
there's sexual tension that on that song, and there's that's no as much as I want to get into.
Wow. Charles, you want to handle that one?
My issue with that song is that Drake's too talented for that line.
And what I mean,
what I mean by that is, like, Drake throughout his whole career, I said this on Shout Out to the Ringer Music Show. We're doing a mini series, Rank Me Later. Gotta plug it. That line that he says, I think back in 2009, where he's just like, hey, calling the women bitches, but the bitches love it. Is like, yes.
It's self-aware.
It's
self-denigrating. Yeah, it's of course.
That's at the same level of silliness to me as, no, oh, but you're like, lesbian,
that
me
line
too.
Is better no, than what
Adam,
he delivered.
This is like an early Adam Sandler movie, this line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And here's like, the thing, too. Like, do we
this
think
is Seth Rogen before Ceramic?
This oh, is, you know what I mean? This super bad level, just kind of like, oh, man, this ain't going to age well. And here's the thing, too. Like, a song before that. I love Poppy's Home.
Poppy's Home is good.
But let's be real. Like, the little line he has about the Sierra Canyon High School parking lot looking like the Magic City parking lot. I'm like, I see what you're trying to do here, but, like, you're way too talented of a lyricist to bungle a line like that when you have every hater out here being like, dude, why are you texting Millie Bobby Brown? Like, here's the thing. I don't think, like, Drake is, like, doing anything wildly wrong. I just think as a lyricist, you're better than that. Like, why are you tripping into this?
That's actually wild, because, like, maybe I'm wrong for this, but I assume that line was actually about the moms.
Yeah.
Like,
I got that. Like, because he is allegedly dating someone who, like, a mom of a basketball player. I get that.
Alleged. Yes, always alleged.
Here's the thing, though. Drake, you're one of the best to do it, period. You know, if you got that, and then you got the Girls Want Girls song, and then you got a song that, no matter how you want to clean it up, has to credit R. Kelly, and then you have a song called All About You F***ing Fans. Like, dude, you're smarter than this. Like, this is just bad songwriting.
Okay, but so the thing that vexed me, and I don't disagree with the fundamentals of what you're saying, was, look, CLB was supposed to come out last year, and it's supposed to come out earlier this year. There has been no shortage of discourse about this record for the last 2 years. Was there too much time? You know, when there's, like, so much time, you start to, like, fiddle with things that were fine, and then you make them not fine. This is why I think deadlines are good for writers, because sometimes you just got to hand the damn thing in and just be done with it. The more you kind of, like, worry it, the more it starts to fray. Is this the product of having too much time? to kind of like overthink it and kind of like move away from strength. I don't know. When I played this record in the car and tried to absorb it just on a sonic level, like production, beats, etc., it felt good. Felt like a Drake record. The thing that Drake records do well, and this is obviously 40's gift, is using component parts that he has previously used or referencing them and building them, building new houses from old bricks and kind of making a neighborhood that seems very consistent using different kinds of input, but it's a very consistent neighborhood. The minute you start reading the lyric sheets is where it kind of falls apart. And that's what I was struggling with. Jeff, what do you think?
I mean, I think that's always been Drake's sort of problem, though. I think, you know, and I wrote about this in my review, shameless plug, you know, he's always been kind of goofy and like just stumbling over himself. And I think that, you know, that's the point I was kind of getting at with even the Girls Want Girls, where it's like the idea that he's getting at is a little bit less super bad or whatever than the way it's executed. I think there is something, there's a kernel there of like, oh, I'm experiencing the world in a different way where I'm encountering women who like women. He stumbled over how to handle that.
Come on.
I don't
come
know.
On. You think he just met some, like, come on.
This isn't the first time Drake has met a lesbian. Like, it's
that's
no,
what
no,
I'm
no.
saying. What?
If you're in the being in the club in 2021 versus 2015, I think the numbers
get out. I can't give Drake. We can't give him.
I'm sorry, man.
Things are changing, and he's recognizing.
I understand that things are yes in the discourse. Things are changing, but I promise you, in the Houston, Atlanta, Vegas era, I'm certain that Drake had encountered a woman who enjoyed the company of other women.
Sure, most likely.
But
the idea still is that, you know, it was easier for him, I think, in the past for, you know, certain cringeworthy lines. I mean, dude, shout out to Asian girls. Let the lights dim some. Come on.
Okay. That's fair. Fair. Okay. No. I'm going to give you that one. But also,
it's like, I think the reason why those lines and those moments didn't kind of fully derail old records is that they fit in a larger context of something that was cohesive and, you know, did what it needed to do. I think the reason why it's easier with this record to kind of be distracted by Drake essentially just being Drake is that the record doesn't do anything other than that. It doesn't do anything beyond the sort of like dumb little moments and annoying references to beefs that don't matter. And you don't get a Drake record. So then all you're left with is his kind of shortcomings.
It's interesting that the Remorse, the album closer, and let's play just a touch of the piano motif at the end of the song. The Remorse references Marvin's Room, to me one of the all-time great Drake records, like really like the
also one in which he sampled someone's voicemail.
True, right? But here's the thing, there's parts of Marvin's Room where Drake is explaining his poor behavior with other women, potentially fans, to someone that he genuinely wants to impress or craves or wants their company. But in 2021, there's just a song called Fans.
It's too direct. Here's the thing. It's the thing like, hey, we've all interviewed enough famous people, enough rappers. Like, we get it. We get, like, you guys, part of fans. I get it. It's too direct. Marvin's Room is something where it's saying something about Drake that's a little bit deeper. Whereas, like, fans, I'm just like, this is just cruel and not, like, you're a better songwriter.
Like, Marvin's Room is going to, like, form the foundation for a script I'm going to write one day. You know what I mean? Like, it's that robust. It's that toxic. It's that stylistically intense. It's that emotionally shattered. The shards. I can still feel the shards of Marvin's Room kind of, like, in my skin 10 years later. Does this mean that Drake has fundamentally run out of creative ways to tell the same stories? My concern on this album, and Charles, you just kind of touched on this, was my concern is ultimately like, yeah, the stories may be the same, but the storytelling is getting maybe a little bit shopworn.
You want to know the part of like this whole record where I don't think it's the best part, but I was like, oh, you found like a new kernel of an idea to explore, or at least a new way to tell it, is actually on the remorse. When he says something to the effect of friends that dedicated their life to just keeping me intact. And that line was so interesting to me because Drake is 34 now and he is surrounded by people whose full-time job is to make sure that Drake survives. He survives the beefs.
Literally. Literally.
Like, yes. Like they Chubbs, whatever, like 40. When I talked to 40 for Rolling Stone, it was very funny talking to a man who was like approaching middle age and like trying to wrap my brain around like, yo, everyone's having kids now. You guys are the kings of Toronto. You're not the guys who can just go to a club anymore and just like mess around and make a song about it. Like everybody knows who you are. And that to me is the interesting part about Drake is like, we never hear those stories of what it's like to be 34 and everyone, your best friends work for you. That's rough. I like that part of the remorse. I just don't like everything else on this record where I'm like, you've done everything on this record better before. And that's my issue.
I agree. And this is, you know, Drake closing songs always have some aspect of that inner excavation. And I think this still felt fresh. It didn't feel like a rehash of prior Drake closing songs. One song that really jumped out to me and I wrote about at the beginning of my review is Race My Mind. Let's actually play a bit of the verse, the rap verse at the end of Race My Mind. I was thinking a lot about types of Drake songs as I was listening to CLB, and I talked about this in my piece about throne songs and bed songs, which are really the two places that Drake spends most of his time. This was the one song that to me kind of like was an intersection of the two, because it's one thing to be pleading for a woman's attention. It's another thing to be anxious about whether you're going to stay on top. It is some third thing to say some competitor of yours is trying to convince the woman whose attentions you desire to abandon you. And that intersection of I'll never be personally satisfied, but also that's one of the real costs of remaining on top. Not that Drake hasn't touched on that idea, but it was very interesting because I felt like when he was rapping to this woman, whoever this woman is, he's rapping to her almost like she's become an op. She's become a competitor. She's become someone to be wary of, not simply because she's letting him down, but because she's a threat to his power. And that's something we don't hear from Drake a lot. We don't hear Drake being threatened by women for his power. We hear him being threatened by women for his emotional stability, but not for his, like, you know, his claim to the throne.
I think the anxiety about that being on top is what we've all kind of been talking about this whole time, is that Drake doesn't seem to have found a way to really navigate that. And I think, as you mentioned on Race My Mind, I think that's a moment in which you kind of get a glimmer of what he's actually dealing with. Because a lot of the record to me is just, you know, a lot of surface level. You're not getting the depth because he's afraid to give it to us as the audience, as the public, as people who could potentially use it against him. And I think that's a moment where a little bit of truth comes out. Do I necessarily want a record full of Drake being threatened by women? Not necessarily, but I think a record in which he kind of confronts what that actually means for him would be a lot more interesting and a lot more compelling for all of the people who have followed him this long. Race My Mind is also my favorite song on the record.
Yeah, great song. Really, really great song. And a great song that I don't even know, even sonically, it maybe would make sense on some prior Drake records, but thematically, it feels very much like what Drake and mid-career, middle age, whatever you want to frame it. That's like a song that's about what Drake is dealing with right now. It feels very like kind of au courant thematically.
John, can I throw you out a hot take? This is why you Please. Got me on here.
Yes.
Is Drake not in Sonics, but in career? Is Drake closer to Eminem than he is Jay-Z? I feel like Drake wants us to believe like he is like a child of Jay, where like I've been thinking for a couple days, I'm like, maybe you're Eminem. Where it's like, whenever you drop a record, it will do well. It will stream. People will buy it. You have those fans. But you've gotten to a point where there's no more excavating. And like everything is going to be as popular as it can be for you. but it's not going to be one of those things where people like in 20 years are like, yo, 500K or dinner with Drake. It's just not going to be there. Sorry, guys.
I don't know. I'll take dinner with Drake.
Dinner where? We didn't really establish where the dinner was.
That's Jay, important. Right? That's important.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's, there were a lot of unknown variables in that 500K or dinner with Jay conundrum that I need more information personally. I like that idea. I don't know if I agree with it. And here's why. Eminem, even at peak Eminem, when Eminem was the literal center of popular culture, not simply pop music, not simply hip hop, but popular culture, Eminem did not spawn an entire sound that remade pop or hip hop in his wake. What he was doing was fundamentally singular and therefore attracted a set of fans who were attracted to this singular thing. At its peak, that was maybe 10 million or 50 million or 100 million fans. But even at its non-peak now, there's still plenty of them hanging around who still identify with that singular idea. Drake's idea, I think, aesthetically is more global. One thing I said in my piece is like, we're still very much in the Drake era. It's just that so many other people are doing Drake records that he almost doesn't need to do them anymore because fundamentally it's been normalized across genre, across scene, across country borders. I've always felt like the potential Drake trap is not necessarily something like Eminem. It's obviously something like Will Smith.
Ooh. I like that.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the potential trap where, like, he drops a record, let's say, a year from now or 3 years from now, and it's like the Kool Moe Dee Wild Wild West Will Smith. You know, it's
Drake
like
people and Men in Black would be so crazy, though.
That'd be real hard.
John.
That actually would be hard.
I love that Men in Black record. Here come the Men in Black. That's yeah. a hard record.
Yo, that's Drake in the new Men in Black where he does, like, that. I'm with it.
Yes.
Hollywood call us. But that to me, like the idea, and look, not that Will Smith was ever the creative engine at the center of hip hop, but there was a moment where Will Smith went from a successful pop star to someone who is parodying what he believed a successful pop star should do. That is always the low-key risk with Drake, that he's going to end up making a record that, frankly, is 10 way too sexies. I'm sorry, Jeff. Ooh. It's 10 way too sexies. Great song. Okay, so maybe you will be the defiant person.
Front row, 60.
That's what
old.
I'm saying. You will be the defiant person giving it 5 stars, like a Rolling Stone classic, like giving the Mick Jagger solo record 5 stars. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Drake,
way
the
too
new
sexy.
Will Smith. Right, you know what I'm saying? Like, that might be your lane. But that, to me, has always been what's hovering just off around the corner with Drake, not simply because he started as an actor, not simply because of how he came into the game, but because he is such a centrist at heart that sometimes if you're a centrist at heart, you do lose feel for the margins. And CLB, because it doesn't reach out in the way that a lot of other Drake records have reached out, it's the first record where I'm like, maybe the censors aren't quite there. And then if they're not there now, what are they going to be 2 years or 4 years down the line?
I think these comparisons miss a little bit about what Drake does really well, which we actually talked about, which is like, and this is something I've started to think about this record a lot, where, you know, it's 21 songs. It's clearly built for streaming. It's clearly built to do these like crazy record numbers. Oh, it's the most streamed on Spotify in a single day or something. That's a completely different lane of what Drake does than when he does his little mixtapes, when he does the Lucy's, when he does these little projects that do speak to a more globalized vision, a wider vision of music, which is why I don't think he'll ever fall into either of those traps, because I don't think Will Smith was like traveling to other countries and picking up on local scenes in the way that Drake does. I don't think Jay, you know, as we talked about, would pop into Houston once and leave. Drake did his job in a way on this record. And I think that's why it's so disappointing, because it's so clear of, I'm the biggest star in the world. I'm going to put a bunch of songs on all the platforms and you're going to like enough of them for me to dominate the charts for the next few months. And then I'll be able to say I did that. And then around Christmas or next year, I'll give you guys 6 tracks on a mixtape and they'll be really good. That to me is what Drake's kind of new modus operandi is.
That's very depressing.
But don't you think, but if those two things, like that kind of like you're almost cleaving Drake's creative output into these two categories, right? But don't you think that both of those categories used to coexist side by side on individual projects rather than it be like, you know, it, like the Hollywood thing, like one for the business and one for me, you know, one blockbuster and one indie film. Is that really what Drake should be doing? Like the thing that Drake did well was basically make the indie film seem like a blockbuster.
Right. Right. And I think, I mean, that to me is where a lot of what is going on with Drake sort of breaks down, right? I see that happening. I don't love it. But then part of me gets it just on a purely business side where it's like, dude, look at the way numbers work in this business now. It's like you have the option to kind of do both and make a ton of money both ways. Yeah, it sort of dilutes the creative output. It dilutes kind of what you're about overall, but kind of the way things are.
I believe in it more than that. I believe there's another if you're reading this too late in my man, you know?
I agree. And actually, Charles, to that point, here's a question, right? The issue with the Eminem comparison is really since the first three Eminem records, Eminem is not making genuine pop hits. He's like a cult figure. He's like a cult figure with like 20 million fans.
Whoa, I remember when Recovery dropped. It was dominating my high school in the worst way.
Yikes, man. You want to shout out your high school just so those kids can get some therapy? Those kids need some help?
You what want to shout it out? Or? Say, yeah, it's like Mountain Dew kids.
Whoa, Jeff.
Quoting someone else.
All right, Jeff, as someone who was at Rolling Stone, my old place of work, let me tell you, whenever you're about to write about Eminem, just shut it all down. Lock everything.
Oh, no, trust me. That was my first mistake at work. I still get emails, dude. From
dog,
weird
can
teenagers.
I just tell you, like, my girl one day, she's like, I was going through some of your old photos. Like, why are there paragraphs and paragraphs from people, like, yes, arguing about Eminem and Logic? And I'm like, yo, like people got at me on LinkedIn. They found my LinkedIn. Yes. It was LinkedIn.
The Eminem thing is interesting because, again, Eminem, I understand that he has this intense cult following. And I understand that when he puts out records, there's a lot of energy around them. And, like, the fans get rousted. But he's not putting out, like, mainstream pop radio hits the way that Drake is. And in a way, Eminem has less to lose because Eminem can just put out 5, 10, 15, 20 songs that just sound plausible, like plausible sad guitar Eminem songs, and the fans are going to go crazy. Drake has the burden of the center of pop music on his shoulders. One of the things that I wrote that I didn't put in the piece, but it was on my mind, Drake could never make a Yeezus. Like, he couldn't make a record that's that scabrous, that's that much of a left turn, that's that much of a violation of the core tenets of what the prior sound was. It's just not something, I don't know if Drake wants to make a record like that, but I don't think he can. You can't turn like a steamship that fast.
But here's the thing, though. When Jeff talked about Eminem fans, he was just like, yeah, the Mountain Dew kids. You don't think, like, my biggest worry, you know, as I get up there in age is that one day I'm on whatever social media is out there and everybody's like, yo, do you see these old people, the candle kids, the champagne kids, listening to that new Drake? Like, that's what I mean. Stylistically, they don't have anything in common. But in terms of, like, we know what a Drake fan is now. We still think it's youth culture. But I'm like, I don't know. I feel like on this record, Drake is talking to, like, my age bracket, which is, like, very depressing in a way where I'm like, high school kids might, like some of the records. But other records are like, what is he's talking about his kid? The fuck? Like, what is this, bro?
It's funny because we have historically always talked about Drake vis-a-vis the youngest generation. But he may have eased into middle age and middle age thematics and middle age topics kind of. And maybe we owe it to him to allow that.
Drake said on this album, you know how many, it was something to the effect of, you know how many girls have had to get a to son like you. And I was just like,
that was the worst line.
I'm like, this isn't the bar you think it is. Like, this isn't, this is not doing
horrible.
What you think it is, Drake. Like, this is the, like, that's an old man bar. Like, what's happening on this record?
Wow.
We do slightly owe it to Drake to allow the man to age. I don't think he's going to have a stranglehold on pop culture, especially when it comes to young people, for very much longer if he has it anymore. I think the question for him now is, how do you ease the tension of your demographic, your age range, and the ascended generation, and how do you bridge the gap? And I think, you know, Drake could still do it. You know, I don't think Drake could come out with a Yeezus, but I do kind of push back on the idea that he can't go further left field. I think Drake's already pulled from influences that are very interesting. You know, he's pulled from dance music influences enough to where I could fully imagine a like drum and bass Drake record. And that would go crazy for a lot of young kids. And it wouldn't necessarily be a TikTok play or like a youth culture play. It would be more recognizing the nostalgia that the current generation has and tapping into that in a way that is uniquely Drake. So I think there's a lot of gas. There's got a lot of gas left. I personally just think this record was all about putting out something to just piss off Kanye and make a bunch of money. And that's what it feels cynical.
So basically your feeling is TK months from now, Drake throws out 3, 4, 5 Lucy's that are spectacular. And we're just like, oh, okay. The CLB discourse didn't matter. Like we're just, that was a glitch.
That's kind of how he does it though. That's kind of his MO.
We're going to get a more life. We're getting a more life after
for
this.
Sure. For
like,
sure.
Like Drake, here's the thing. Like when I was writing my Drake review, I'm like, bro, like, I might be the only one out here who's just like, this isn't it. And then when I woke up and every other critic was like, oh, this ain't it. I'm like, oh, nah, he got something in the chamber. He's already back. Because this is what happened when I vividly remember. For everyone who does not, like, I have a podcast on the Ringer Network. Shout out to the Ringer. And like, I had people in my personal life being like, yo, like, what's happening on the Drake record? I'm like, well, I have a podcast about it, you know? I said everything. And they're like, no. I'm FaceTiming you to hear in real time. I don't want to listen to your podcast. And that was like, oh, this is like views. This is like, we're all in real time being like, yo, what did he give us? This is not what I wanted. This is not it. So he has a more life on deck.
Okay, that's interesting. I genuinely hope what both of you are saying is correct. Because like, the thing about Drake that there is an anchoring power with Drake as far as how other people orient themselves around his stylistic kind of forms. And I think I would like to still live. I'd like to still be in a time where that's true. Obviously, it won't be true 10 years from now or 20 years from now, but I don't think that we are at the end of that phase. That's my hope. This was like the first time I've listened to a Drake record. It was like, is it kind of over? Is it almost?
That after Dark Lane demo tapes?
Is it over the top of the parabola? You know, like this is like maybe the first time I felt that.
We need to free you, John. We need to free you. We need to free you from the OVO shackles. Okay. It's okay. I'm an Aubrey's Angel
as
well. Are
you going to come over and remove this owl tattoo?
Yeah. Like, here's the thing. I love Drake. I will love Drake forever, but it's okay. We're like, he can ride off into the sunset. It's fine.
Okay. Let me ask one last question before we go. Do you see on the horizon another artist who has the capacity to orient a broader shift in the sound of hip hop referencing pop with the kind of authority and strength that Drake has done in the last 10 years? Do you see someone currently working or on the horizon who potentially has that capacity?
Absolutely not. And that has nothing to do with talent, in my opinion. That all has to do with the era that Drake came in. Like, Drake still, like, he straddled the line. He was the last artist that we could think of where it's just like, oh, he's coming in at the end of the CD era, at the end of the radio era, and the beginning of streaming. So he was the best equipped to take a bunch of different generations, mash them together, and be the artist of the moment. And everything's been so fragmented where it's just like, yes, can Roddy Ricch have one of the biggest records of the year, the last 5 years? Same thing with Lil Nas X. Yes. Are there a bunch of people trying to reorient themselves to sound like Lil Nas X or Roddy Ricch?
No.
No. And that's because, like, Drake was just the perfect artist, a talented artist at the perfect time. In the same way, like, are we going to get another Taylor Swift? Probably not.
Jeff, what do you think?
I somewhat agree. I mean, I think the question doesn't fit the dynamic that we're living in. You know, I think we don't live in an era of the kind of mass culture that I think Drake, you know, benefited from. When this came out, the first thing I thought of was that MTV News documentary right before Thank Me Later came out. I think it was called like Better Than Good Enough. It was like Drake on tour after his mixtape dropped. And it was this big moment on MTV. I fully like vividly remember seeing the commercial, making a note to go home and watch it, And, you know, there's not, that doesn't necessarily exist in the culture currently. I don't know that that means that we're not going to see a star, a musician or an artist that finds a way to kind of shift the way everyone does things. I think it's not going to be on TikTok probably. I think that well is already pretty saturated, but I have a lot of faith in like what I see on the younger side of things, especially when from the kids who are already kind of already bitter about youth culture as we write about it in all these magazines.
Drag us. Jeez, Jeff. Shout out Blade. So I don't know. I think my instinct tells me that Charles, as you were saying, and I think Jeff, you were echoing, like there was something particularly singular about the moment of Drake's arrival in the late 2000s and the early 2010s. And Jeff, to echo your point, the shift from IG feed to IG story, and then the shift from IG story to TikTok. And now the emergent, you know, what's going to be happening in the shift away from public facing social media altogether towards, you know, private discords and things like that. Like the fragmentation is just much, much more intense, which makes it hard for anyone to achieve the kind of like full scale totalizing pop culture moment that Drake has done. But we shall see. Guys, thank you so much for coming through. Jeff, your first time on Popcast. Also check out Secret, Jeff's magazine. Charles, your last time on Popcast. That's really great. I appreciate it. Listen to every damn podcast ever.
Wow. My man doing me dirty.
Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Facebook group, get in the Discord, subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content, wherever that might be. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We will be back next week. Let's go out with a little bit of Drake pettiness. This is 7 a.m. on Bridal yeah. Path.
Go squad. Hey. Look. I wish everyone could tell me exactly what they need from me. The first second they speak to me, I'm not with all the secrecy, secretly beefing me behind closed doors, but playing it peacefully for the streets to see my some decency. Don't move like a puto. Could at least